Sherry Daniels steps out. What does it mean? Planned Parenthood on the losing end of a court ruling. Immigration reform protesters arrested. Joe Donnelly for Senate, Jim Wallace for governor. That plus the Indianapolis lawyer kicked off Facebook and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 13, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, 1,100 people, a record crowd, turned out for the state GOP dinner. Many of them thought they would see an announcement regarding a Mitch Daniels campaign for the White House. The crowd waved signs that said, "Run, Mitch, run," as the governor took the stage. But there were only offhanded references to a possible 2012 bid. The keynote speech by Sherry Daniels focused completely on her experiences as First Lady. She made no mention of 2012. Outside of jokes, here's all the governor said.
This whole business... of running for national office. I'm not saying I won't do it.
This would have been a good opportunity for the governor to announce that he was running, but it didn't happen, so we'll be waiting for that announcement soon, I hope.
Did the First Lady's silence speak volumes? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel. John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, what's the message delivered by the Daniels at that dinner?
Well, Mike says they're undecided. I've never thought he was going to run, so I'm not at all surprised by the message. But I really, frankly, think you have to give her style points for soldiering on Thursday when you had national media stories in the Times and the Washington Post going on about their personal life. And she got up there and delivered what, to all intents and purposes, was a charming speech with national coverage of that speech. I mean, talk about a maiden voyage with a spotlight right on you, and she was able to do it well, so more power to her. But I still don't think he's going to run.
Growing indication here that Mitch Daniels' decision on whether or not to run is based on what his wife wants him to do. Is that fair?
No, it's not fair, because I think it is a family decision. It's not only his wife, but they have four daughters and three sons-in-law, and so it's a family decision, to say the least. But I agree with Ann. I think Sherry Daniels did a tremendous job. She stood up in front of that crowd with a lot of expectation built up around this, both by the national media and locally and within the party structure, looking for signs that something big was going to happen. And I think something big did happen. I think the fact that she pulled that off and did it the way she did. She's given hundreds of speeches as First Lady of Indiana over the last 6.5 years, and she carries herself well all the time. She can more than handle the job of running and being First Lady of the United States, I think, in my opinion. But the question is, do you really want to have that lifestyle? I mean, a year and a half of a grueling campaign, 8 years in office if you lightning would strike and you're there in that the biggest fishbowl in the world for 8 years, and then a life of protection from the Secret Service after that for the rest of your life. I mean, that's pretty heady stuff to decide whether or not you want to put yourself and your family through that kind of thing. But having said all that, I'm now more convinced that he is going to run. I've been saying for months that he's not, but I think he will announce.
But you have to be convinced that she's opposed to the idea.
No, I'm not convinced of that at all.
You're not?
No, I think the fact that she went through that and handled herself the way she did and allowed herself to be kind of put in that position tells me that Maybe they're still thinking about the idea. I'm not saying it's a done deal, but we will know within the next 2 weeks.
The position you're talking about is this reporting that talked about the fact that Mitch and Sherry Daniels divorced in the 90s, and then 3 years later they remarried. It's something that people in Indiana politics are well aware of, but it hasn't been widely reported. It wasn't used against him. It's not been considered a political issue here, but it's now been out reported. Does this get that behind them?
I don't know. I think there is such, the spotlight on presidential candidates is so bright. I don't think anybody who has not sought office at that level can understand it. I don't think any of us necessarily can understand just that level of scrutiny, especially if you get past some of the early caucuses and some of the early primaries and you are a viable contender for the nomination. There's nothing that a National Press Corps likes more than finding out something that nobody else knows, or if somebody back in Indiana knows it, there's this second wave where, hey, we've discovered it anew for National Press Corps. So, the limelight is incredibly bright.
The one time Mitch Daniels spoke out publicly about this, he said, if you like happy endings, you'll like this story. I mean, we've seen candidates who are divorced, candidates who are remarried that don't get the sort of scrutiny that this seems to be getting at the moment.
And it is, I think, an indication of what would be to be expected. And it's really unfortunate. I mean, it's become, what matters, who cares what this candidate has had for breakfast in the morning, but it becomes that cycle's, issue of the day. And it's unfortunate that that's the kind of thing that gets focused on and scrutinized. There are no secrets in that situation, but it's news again because it appeared in two national newspapers. There's no secret about the governor's problems at Princeton, but it was news again because, he was being positioned as a candidate. So, the level of intense scrutiny is incredible on all these personal issues. I think if the governor does decide to get into this, he instantly becomes a very credible and front-running candidate because he represents a level of seriousness about issues that hasn't been apparent in the Republican ranks to this point. And that's really where the debate should be over whether or not his policies and his proposals and his past record here in Indiana it comes under scrutiny, but that's not where the scrutiny will lay, and that's got to be why he's got hesitation right now.
Well, I'll speculate that that's where it should be.
You want to give credit to the Washington Post for divulging the fact that the planting of that story came from one of the Republican opponents for the nomination, as it were. And the problem with it is, and if you are an intensely personal person, as I think Sherry Daniels is, and she certainly has a right to be, you look at that, and it isn't just uncovering the facts. It's sometimes making them up. Mm-hmm. Remember all the rumors about the adopted child that John, I'm losing his name, isn't that awful? The last Republican presidential nominee, McCain. John McCain, their adopted child being his child out of wedlock with someone not his wife. Those kinds of things obviously are not true, but you have to have a certain thickness of skin to be able to tolerate those. In the national media.
Yeah, Daniel's favorite line of late is that I'm ready for this bungee jump, but you have to strap other people on.
That's right. And I think he's serious about that. That's as I said, I think it is a family decision. But I think they are going to come down on the side that he could get this done and could win.
It's interesting.
That may be the biggest deterrent.
Well, that may be. Then he might win, right?
Interesting. One of the anecdotes he mentioned the other night was too that he pointed out how tough it was that there was some convincing that needed to be done in 2004 when he first sought the governor's office. That he said it's no overstatement to say that was a tough sell. I don't know if that was a foreshadowing.
Some help this time because I understand Laura Bush called Sherry Daniels
that's
and
right.
tried to convince
well,
her.
That's,
that
I mean,
this
I
is
think that's
doing.
A level of the interest among people who are in the party who really look at Mitch Daniels and see a candidate that they could win with. But he has this hesitation, and rightly so. I mean, what he faced in 2004 was single A baseball versus the ultra major leagues
right.
when he if he decides to run
and
for president.
Remember, it's not that group of the party trying to persuade him to run who is going to select the nominee
right.
of the party. Well, there's where the rubber hits the road.
Well, and it's the people who are concerned about his call for a truce on social issues who don't have the gravitas on policy issues that he does.
And besides,
right?
They've got Newt Gingrich out there for policy now.
Yeah.
Right?
Moving on. Federal Judge Tanya Walton Pratt this week ruled against Planned Parenthood's request for a temporary restraining order regarding a new abortion law. It's the bill that would take tax money away from Planned Parenthood. When Governor Daniels signed the measure into law, the ACLU took the issue to court. There will be a hearing on an injunction request in June. The governor explained his decision to sign the bill on a new program. Mike Ahern, One-on-One.
The bill you're asking about wasn't my idea. But, you know, it was attached to a bill I support. And on inspection, I found absolutely no reason to change my position because that amendment was added. The charges that anybody would lose access to health care are not true. I know folks are sincerely concerned they might be, but they're not.
Mm-hmm. Mike McDaniel, how long will it be before we know if the governor is right or wrong that point?
I think we're going to, well, on whether or not they can find health care in other places, I think that's, they can. I think that was oversold as an argument against this legislation. But as far as whether we're going to know for a while, I think this lawsuit's going to go on for a long time.
And it's going to be back in the General Assembly next year. And I'm guessing that statistics on whether or not there are people who can find...
It isn't only that question. Okay, what you're saying here is you have an entity that's a not-for-profit that raises money to do something that's perfectly legal, that the Indiana General Assembly, in its stupidity, has now said they will not permit them to do with the tax part of the money. It's like saying, I don't like the fact that Duke Energy tried to corrupt the system by hiring people and using them, so let's have the state not contract with Duke Energy for anything ever again. How about that? What's the difference? That's why it's unconstitutional, in addition to all the practicing medicine without a license and denying poor women health care. So I think it's going to get thrown out. I don't think this is just the fact that Planned Parenthood indicated they could provide the services for a short period of time with donated contributions does not mean that it may mean there's no irreparable harm immediately, but I think Judge Pratt realizes that it's important to have this heard immediately.
One of the things the governor suggested is that Planned Parenthood could change its corporate structure so it has one entity that performs abortions and another entity that does reproductive health. They apparently are willing to consider that, but want to pursue the court angle first.
Well, because there are two things going on here. One, as Ann points out, it is a legal activity. And so you're asking somebody to change a legal activity because it doesn't fit with your definition of what should be done or shouldn't be done. So I think that's a major issue. But the other part here is that there is the we're on the vanguard here of the abortion fight, and Roe v. Wade may ultimately come into play here. I mean, you're going to have appeals. These may reach the Supreme Court, and they may ultimately become those that affect Roe v. Wade one way or another going forward. And so I think that's why Planned Parenthood wants to go forward with this and make sure that all the other issues get heard, too.
Well, it's not just Planned Parenthood of Indiana. This has become a national matter.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have the American Civil Liberties Union involved in the litigation. And you're exactly right. I think it's become a rallying cry for people on both sides of the issue. And I think you're seeing that with money flowing into the coffers of Planned Parenthood of Indiana, from people around the country saying, well, if your lawmakers won't let the federal dollars flow into your till, we'll help you out in the short term. But I think this, as everybody has said, this is tailor-made for a case that will go who knows how far, probably very well to the Supreme Court, because it is an issue that is, as you see, the further limitations on what has for several decades been a legal practice, it's got to be decided probably at the states, at
they
the
just want to bump
highest
their,
level.
They want to pound
the
their chest and show they're tough guys. They don't care about what they do to the poor, so it'll go all the way up.
More controversy now generated by the General Assembly. A protest over Indiana's new immigration reform law led to the arrest of six people this week. A group of about 60 undocumented students and their supporters came to the State House to encourage the governor to veto two bills. One of those bills would, in part, force undocumented Indiana students to pay out-of-state tuition, triple the cost of in-state rates in some cases.
It's targeting those who don't look like Americans here, and they're pointing us out and then targeting us and then making it so that we can't pursue on a higher education because we can't afford it.
Carla Lopez Owens there. John Ketzenberger, was that a successful protest?
You know what, I'm going to say it is, and here's why. I mean, you know, the six students were arrested, they were charged, they are not going to be deported, but there has been a lot of discussion around this issue. And I think this really drives home the point that this is an issue that needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed nationally because, you know, these students had no say in what their fate and position in the United States was, yet they have no ability at this point to affect their lives going forward. And I think that points out that there needs to be a rational immigration law implemented in the United States so that everybody from one end of the country to the other knows what they need to do so that they could be citizens.
So they were arrested. They'll face criminal charges for trespassing and mischief.
Misdemeanor charges, though. I think,
right.
With one exception, I think, was charged with resisting law enforcement.
They were given deportation hearings. And ICE determined that they won't be deported. That has Senator Mike Delf and others upset that federal law isn't being enforced. Well, should it be?
Should they be deported? No. I mean, I think John's point is well taken. These are people who, in some cases, have lived in the country since, I think, age 5.
Right.
An 11-year-old in another case. It's not as if they, at age 5, said, gee, I think I'm going to go and enter the country illegally and start a new life there. I mean, they're playing with the proverbial cards that have been dealt them right now.
This is sort of the local version of the DREAM Act. Which has been hot on Capitol Hill this week. Richard Lugar was a co-sponsor, took his name off. Seems like the public is going toward the idea of punishing people like these kids.
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, to go back to your original question of whether or not this was, whether they were successful, the answer is no. I mean, trying to break your way into the governor's office is not a very smart thing to do, subsequently they should be punished for that. I mean, they were doing something they shouldn't have been doing. As far as subsidizing education for people who are illegal immigrants, most Hoosiers will tell you they don't want to pay for subsidizing education for people that aren't legal citizens of the United States. I mean, it would be overwhelming if you put that to a test in this that question to the Hoosiers.
And their parents are working.
It's just a fact.
Their parents are working in this.
Yeah,
and most of the people, if you did a poll, wouldn't agree with the Bill of Rights either. Should we repeal that too?
I'm just telling you. That's
the bottom
where the
line
public
is. You've got parents here that are employed, that are paying taxes, just like everybody else, and you've got these kids caught in the catch-22. And that's why you need reform. Lugar should have had the wherewithal to stand up and do what he did the last time and be a co-sponsor again instead of tacking to the right because of the primary, and on that, you've got to do something, because these are just the kind of people we want to have here, people who are getting an education, who will have jobs, and who will contribute.
I'll just say also that in terms of protest, if doing something you're not supposed to do makes it automatically a bad protest, you could say that virtually every civil rights protest
in
the 1960s...
Trying to break into the governor's office.
Well, no, but
starting
with
riding on the bus and not sitting in the back.
I personally don't think it wasn't a wise approach. It did bring attention to their cause.
Which I think was the goal.
Which is the definition of a successful protest.
Yeah.
Moving on. As of this week, there's a Democrat in the U.S. Senate race.
Joe Donnelly was the star candidate for Indiana Democrats in 2010, winning re-election in a Republican district. But redistricting means that a repeat performance in 2012 will be more difficult, so he's moving up. He made his announcement in a YouTube video.
Now I'm here because I want to take the fight for American jobs and opportunity to the United States Senate. I want to make sure that the voices of hardworking Hoosiers are heard in the U.S. Senate.
Donnelly hopes to take advantage of a split in the GOP caused by a Richard Murdoch primary challenge to six-term Senator Richard Lugar. Though in a conference call, Donnelly said he's not focused on the Republicans.
This was more about how can I best serve the state.
Republicans are already comparing Donnelly to former Congressman Brad Ellsworth, who made a poor showing in the 2010 Senate race.
We've seen this movie before. He's voted for the Obama agenda and talked a different way back home.
The fact is I've been one of the most independent members of the House. My own person, I vote the interests of my district first, and that's the kind of senator I'll be.
And while Donnelly deflects, Democrats look to 2012 with optimism.
Joe Donnelly's going to step up to the statewide level, and he's going to be a very formidable opponent at the statewide level.
John Schwanes, is Donnelly taking a risk worth making?
I'm not sure there's much of a risk that he's taking, quite frankly, because of the maps as they were drawn by this most recent session of the General Assembly and signed by the governor this past week. The second district, which he has represented since he was elected first to the U.S. House, it ain't the same district anymore. I mean, it picked up a lot of the Republican portions of Elkhart, Kosciuszko counties. There's a good chance he won by what, a percentage point before with the old district. By all accounts, he would have a very tough row to hoe this time around in the general election. So where's the risk? I mean, if you're gonna do it, this is probably
the time.
Take a
chance on the big prize.
Sure.
Well, and you know, I think that they sense that the coming primary fight between Dick Lugar and Richard Murdoch is going to have an effect that might play favorably for Joe Donnelly. I think the theory is that if Senator Lugar gets taken down in the primary, that opens it up for Donnelly, and you know, maybe it's sound theory. Who knows?
Would Donnelly rather face Murdoch than Lugar?
I think he'll face whoever. I don't think he's going to establish a precedent for that and endorse anybody. Mike always says that's the kiss of death, too. So I don't think he cares. I think he thinks that he is the kind of independent senator that we've always elected in Indiana, the kind that Richard Lugar used to be before he started tacking so far to the right you couldn't see him on the spectrum anymore.
Last time he ran, Lugar got a pass from the Democrats. Anything but this time.
No, he's not going to get a pass, but this is, in my opinion, this is the beginning of the end of Joe Donnelly's political career. I think he has looked at this congressional district and said there's no way I can win it. He is taking a chance. I think he's betting on the come that Murdoch's going to beat Lugar, which I think he's wrong about that. And when Lugar wins his primary, Lugar will beat Donnelly because Lugar gets about 30% of the Democrat vote.
Right.
And we found out how hard it is to run from a congressional district when the majority of that congressional district is not in the central Indiana media market.
If it's Donnelly versus Murdoch, it'll be the guy who helped save Chrysler versus the guy
who tried to kill Chrysler.
It's not going to be Donnelly versus Murdoch.
Okay. We'll see.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, Joe Donnelly would do better against which Republican? A, Richard Lugar, B, Richard Murdoch, or C, it doesn't matter. Last week's question was, will Mike Pence moderate his views as he runs for governor? 10% said yes, 50% said no, 40% said he is incapable. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Mike Pence has company this week in the race for the 2012 GOP nomination for governor. Fisher's businessman Jim Wallace says he can manage the state's finances. He has a background in the insurance business. Wallace is a former member of the Hamilton County and Fisher's councils and a graduate of West Point. He's been hitting the Lincoln Day dinner circuit since early in the year. Ann Delaney, what are his chances?
Well, I think it would obviously be an uphill battle for him because Pence has such great name recognition and the ability to raise money. But, you know, I don't know enough about Wallace to know whether he can raise money. He's going to represent that part of the Republican Party that's fiscally conservative but at least has some mainstream, isn't crazy on the social issues, and would want somebody who's fiscally conservative but not an ideologue, which is what you get with Pence. You don't get anybody who wants to moderate his views. I think that poll was pretty apt. He's out there to change your mind, not to listen to what you have to say.
Well, and Wallace, at his announcement, said that he's not that concerned about social issues. Is that attractive to Indiana voters?
Well, and part of Ann's answer was correct, and that part
was that
we don't know anything about him. I don't know anything about him, and that tells me he's got a problem in a Republican primary because you don't know
Mike McDaniel.
No,
you can't.
No,
run.
That's not the point. The point is most Republicans don't know anything about him.
Yeah, Mike's been
so he
doesn't
have any name ID, and whether or not he can raise money or not is a question. And so other than name ID and money, the two most important things in politics, that might be a problem for him.
Yeah. He says he's not going to self-finance and that he'll be competitive when it comes to money.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough, I mean, for the reasons that have been said, the name ID, the support that Pence brings to it. And the question of whether his approach has an appeal to Hoosiers, and we'll say this 100 times, at least between now and the primary, it really doesn't matter what appeals to Hoosier voters as a whole. It matters what appeals to the people who are going to go out in the primary to vote, and that is not necessarily representative of Hoosiers as a whole.
Might it be good for Mike Pence to have a challenge?
You know, I think it is good for Mike Pence. I know that Ann and Mike never like primaries unless it's on the other side of the aisle. But
right.
I think it makes him pay attention to details he might otherwise not pay attention to. He's not going to have to spend a lot of money, most likely. And yeah, I think it helps raise the issues for him. So yeah, I think it's probably very useful for Mike Pence.
Finally, an Indianapolis bankruptcy attorney named Mark Zuckerberg had his Facebook account given back this week after it was taken away. The attorney, whose name is similar to that of Facebook founder Mark E. Zuckerberg, said his account on the social networking website was suddenly shut down Wednesday. 2 years ago, he had a similar experience and proved his identity in order to get the account back. This time, he received a message from Facebook after a few hours apologizing for the inconvenience. Mike McDaniel, was that really a bad experience for the Indianapolis Zuckerberg?
I'm sure it was. You know, I mean, you know, mistaken identity happens all the time. I get mistaken for Brad Pitt about once a week.
I understand.
So I have that problem just once a week.
You get mistaken for Woody Burton now.
No, no, that's it. Wow. Okay.
That's Indiana Week Review for this week.
Good advertising for him.
Mark Zuckerberg couldn't pay for that advertising.
That's right.
I'm sure he's grateful.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. See you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.